This podcast is from the IDPF Digital Book 2012 Conference at Book Expo America.
I'm Garth Convoy. I'm chairman of the board of the IDPF, and it is my distinct pleasure to introduce Liza Daly, who has been in the EPUB space for a long time and is a fellow board member at the IDPF. She's with Safari Books Online and previously of Three Press Consulting. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to Liza. Thanks.
Thanks, Garth. Like Richard, I have been thinking a lot recently about the sort of post-download period that I'm going to assert we might be entering. I've been looking at this from the point of view of the EPUB spec, which in EPUB 3 very clearly states that the specification is about a single file format. In EPUB 2, there was an idea that an EPUB could be a sort of abstract series of files in a directory, but I think for the sake of clarity, in EPUB 3, we say it's a single file format. Now, that's neutral. I mean, that's not a good or a bad thing. There are aspects of files that are attractive and align with some of the goals of EPUB, generally speaking. The idea that a book content is portable and interoperable across a variety of systems, having the ability to package that into a discrete file that can be moved in an ideal world across reading systems through retail channels is obviously desirable. And it's been a fantastic success with EPUB as a distribution format, whether it's been from a publisher into a retail channel, then maybe into Mobi, or you know, EPUB sort of end-to-end. That was really the goal of the specification, and we've extended that and again, even sort of strengthened that language about containers and files in EPUB 3. Now, one of the benefits of files is that they can be copied, and of course, if you're a publisher, you don't necessarily want your files to be copied. So we have, as it came up quite a bit this morning, this tricky scenario where we both want the benefits of contained files, but we also are fighting against them a little bit because of the implications of copying. But that's not actually what I'm going to talk about, thank God. Instead, I want to step back a little bit and think carefully about whether the model that we've been using in the ebook world, whether it was EPUB or Mobi or even PDF, is necessarily the best forward-looking model, especially as we grow the idea of what a digital book is. Right now we have what is strangely very much an analog of the print world, where you have a publisher or even an author that produces a product, which is a book. It leaves their little book factory. It moves through the ecosystem. Just like in the print world, the book leaves the publisher or the printer and is more or less intact all the way through the chain. You might slap a price sticker on it or a remainder sticker on it. You might wrap an ebook file in some DRM. And some retailers do some transformations to those books, sort of for better or worse. But generally, the model is the thing that's emitted from the publisher is the same thing that ends up in the consumer hand. And this would work really well if we had an ecosystem where there was full interoperability. Now, realistically, that just isn't even possible because there are going to be a variety of devices that have different capabilities. Some content is just intrinsically not going to be able to operate across all of those platforms. But I want to think a little bit about recontextualizing the idea of what an EPUB file is away from being the final manifestation that ends up in a consumer hand to something more like just a list of objects that are inside that book. Really something more like a recipe for how you would create the final book file that is read by a consumer. And what I mean by this is that instead of the book file containing everything in its final form, that a consumer is going to read. So, say, images that are all in ping format, that are ping format when they come out of the book factory and they're ping format when they arrive at the consumer. Instead, we think a little bit more of a high level, something more like a manuscript or a series of raw assets. So the book says, the book file says not so much, here is my set in stone manifestation, but here's some stuff I have, and I'm offering it to you, the reading system, to make some decisions about what you're going to show or not show, and in what form, and in what context. So let's say we have this imaginary book that has all of these things in it. Some of these are obviously just straight up EPUB 2 concepts, but some of these are sort of alternate business models, including different versions of that same content in the package. Some of them are things that are just new technologies like CSS3. So I think about this conversation that happens in this kind of model, where instead of, again, this, here's your final book, now read it, it's a conversation between some kind of remote service, the provider of the ebook sets of libraries, and then the final reading system that's consuming it in a particular period in time. So, you know, are you on a mobile device right now? Well, you probably don't want a very big image, so I'm going to send you a fairly small image or a slightly lower res image. But if you're on a Retina screen iPad, I'm going to send you the giant image that I have in my sort of manuscript and my set of raw assets. Right now, I talk to publishers who say they cannot make beautiful picture books on an iPad because the limitations on the file sizes that are imposed by the retail channels literally prevent that. They cannot make a nice, like, sort of double pixel size full spread because it's just simply not allowed. So everyone has to then kind of dumb their books down to fit, you know, essentially a sort of worst case scenario for the capabilities of the device. Getting more interesting, instead of just saying we're going to create some kind of enhanced ebook, it's going to have huge amounts of video and audio, we're going to force you who don't care about that stuff to download a 50 megabyte file on on a mobile device, you could say that these are some offerings that the content has, and in a particular context you could choose to use them or not. And sometimes you may decide that you actually want the multimedia and not the text, because perhaps you're in your car and you would like to hear effectively an audiobook version of that same thing. I mean, we have all these products in the marketplace now, but they're not all in the same file. They have different SKUs, they go through channels differently, and the more varied their content is, the more likely that publishers have to produce completely discrete different files for different channels. I'm also really interested in stuff that is more than just picking and choosing off a menu for content, but really dramatically different publications inside the same package, where that makes sense. In EPUB, sometimes people have asked, well, I have a French version and an English version. How can I put those in the same package? And I think that the sort of response that the IDPF has had so far, totally reasonably, has been that for most publishers, those are really different products. And that's fine, and maybe that's sort of the best, you know, that's not the most important problem for us to tackle from a specification angle. But publishers used to think that large print books were different products. And we've explicitly done away with that assertion that just because you are print disabled or visually disabled, you need a different product. We now want that to be the same product, and that's incredibly admirable. I think that could be extended to a lot of other scenarios. You know, classrooms with kids who do not speak English should be able to get the same book as the students they're sitting next to, but they simply get a different rendition. You don't want to, there is no way currently to do that kind of packaging if the idea is that the same book, which is fairly static, goes to every consumer. And I do not read Spanish. I don't need the Spanish edition. But I could hand my e-reader to someone who did, and they could just sort of turn that feature on. So where I think this concept has a lot of big wins is in book production. I think everyone here who has made an ebook and has distributed it commercially has had to deal with the fact that you don't just have to know about technology, you have to become an expert in the business rules of a variety of different companies that you just really don't care about. There is no reason why you should know or care whether Amazon wants MP3 and Apple only will do streaming, or there's just huge multiplicity of rules that are getting actually worse all the time as we expand the capabilities in the format and in these readers. Instead, the publisher should really just worry about the content. That's what they're for. Put any kind of media in the book, ship it. It's someone else's problem to transcode that or make decisions about file size based on the context of the reader. That process that I'm going to reuse a term from the web, content negotiation, I will explain a little bit about how I think that could work. And the outcome of this is that the reader gets what they want and the publisher doesn't have to do a lot of work. So I think of, from the perspective of creating this book, it's just a kitchen sink approach. Just throw absolutely everything that you know about the title. Some of it may be relevant or not. I'm going to show an example of why it could be sort of good to not know what you're doing, why you're putting some content into a book. Essentially make the problem of those fine-grained technology decisions really the problem of the technology vendors where I think they belong. There's a model for this on the web already. It's called content negotiation. It's actually not as widely used as it probably should be. But this is the sort of use case that is imagined by it. You have a web browser that says, I know from the settings of my operating system and the user that their primary language is French. But a user can also say, I also speak English or German. And in a properly configured server client environment, the server, Apache in this case, would just transparently say, well, you've told me you speak French, so I'm just going to give you French content without even asking. And some sites do this way, and some sort of force you to choose. At a low level, this is the sort of this is what the syntax looks like. It's a series of requests for a type of content, and then typically a wait that says how important that is. So here it's saying I would really prefer German, but English is a sort of fallback. It's sort of half. I like it half as much. At the level of content, then it is also a way of saying what the capabilities of that client are. On the web, this is actually a little bit less interesting now because all browsers are sort of converging on more or less the same. But so here the browser's saying, I speak HTML, like, God, I hope so. I'd also accept some kind of text, and I like a variety of image formats, in this case, more or less the same. So kind of imagining this in the architecture of our world, which is a client, an ebook client that is speaking to a server that could actually say, I actually know EPUB3. Now, this is not a real content type, but I speak EPUB3, so if you've got that, please give it to me. Otherwise, I'll take two. I really hate PDF, so I'd actually rather have plain text than that nightmare. But you could sort of imagine a lower capability device that would say, I don't speak EPUB3. It didn't provide that. And the server could actually take that EPUB3 file. We have pretty good rules about the differences between those two, transcode it in real time to an EPUB2 and send that down to the device. And the reading system would not know that what it really got was an EPUB3 because what it saw when it landed was an EPUB2. So we can kind of keep dropping down levels. This is sort of imagining this conversation. Now I've got an EPUB3 file, say. So now I can talk about what inside that file I might actually want. I want the French version if it's available. And I can list all the things I know about my ability to render content. So the conversation about whether I'm going to read the fallback version or the sort of first order version of some content type could actually happen at the server end. If I don't speak SVG, the server could just hand me a book full of raster images. Obviously not awesome, but it's certainly better than no book at all. Or the publisher having to do that work in advance again, creating raster images for sort of an unknown device size, it's just like completely not ideal and not really what the publisher should do when this is a technology problem, not a publishing problem. And then dropping down even further, I don't know how many people have read the fixed layout informational document that just came out relatively recently, but this is sort of IDPF architecture for doing in this sort of more advanced but somewhat less paginated layouts. So that's another selection criteria that happens in the context of an EPUB 3. It's like, well, this is the layout of this book in portrait. This is the layout of that book in landscape. You could imagine, again, a scenario where you have something, a device whose orientation is fixed, like a television. That's something that only needs the landscape version, and it wants it at a certain bit depth, and it could just get what it needs in that time. So these books could just be arbitrarily large without compromising sort of download time or sending data over a 3G connection that is being paid for by the device vendor. And then but the outcome for the user is the same as it always should have been. They get the book in the right format at the right time, and hopefully they get it a little bit faster and possibly cheaper, because the cost to produce these things has been offset a little bit by technology instead of publishers making these sort of massive zip files that try to anticipate every single contingency and reading system they'll encounter down the supply chain. So I'm going to show kind of a weird example. This is a sort of project we're doing inside Safari. So just sort of stepping back a little, my company, Free Press, was acquired by Safari Books Online at the beginning of this year. We had an HTML5 e-reader called Ibis Reader that Safari is looking at to use for some of our mobile products. We've traditionally done native apps, and sort of, it would be obvious to anyone who paid attention that we were acquired that Safari wants to do some more stuff with mobile and HTML5. But we had a problem, which is that Ibis only spoke EPUB because I was a snob and I didn't want to deal with the messy world of PDF. And Safari also has a fairly large number of standalone videos. They're not video books. They're just literally videos, a sort of first-order content type. So we needed to support both of those in our platform, or we would if we were going to do a mobile product with the content that Safari has. So we did this little sort of side project that was like, okay, well, first, I guess what we'll do is we'll teach Ibis how to render a PDF. We'll make little objects in the database that represent PDFs, and we'll sort of mirror everything that we did to create EPUB support, but do it for PDF, because, of course, we'd have to do it that way. It's a different kind of thing. And my developer, Chuck Haas, said, well, why don't we just turn PDFs into EPUB? And Keith Falgren, my founder, and I sort of laughed, like, oh, yeah, everyone tries to do that. That's, like, the most impossible thing ever. Let me show you Calibrate, and you'll never try to do that again. But then as we talked, what I realized is that that's not what he was not saying is let's take a fixed format and turn it into a reflowable format, because that does not work. Was let's just mimic the EPUB container and put the PDF images in an EPUB container. So it's not really an EPUB. It doesn't have all of the awesomeness of reflowable, but it acts like an EPUB, and we don't have to tell our reading system anything new. It just gets an EPUB file, and it was sort of transformed into a PDF. So we said, okay, when we give a PDF to this system, what is it going to know about it? What are all the possible things it can know about a book that it's been given? Well, the pages have a certain look, and we're going to start by just turning those into raster images, because that's the sort of simplest thing to do. It's a real professionally produced PDF, so it actually has useful extractable text, so we probably want that, at least for search. And it's an ordered document, so it has table of contents. And as a retailer, we have a lot of other metadata that wasn't in the PDF, but that we can integrate into the EPUB package. So, we did this, and we sort of produced these essentially fixed layout EPUBs with page images. This is the image of page 9, and then the text from page 9 is used really just for search, so we actually have it non-displayed. Because you know this actually happens to be a pretty good sample, but when you do PDF text extraction, there are a lot of weird artifacts. It's not as bad as OCR, but it's certainly not something you'd want to give to a reader. So we're like, hey, this works. You know, we took the PDF table of contents, the outline, and turned it into an NCX. This is an EPUB 2 right now. Fed this book into Bookle. This is just a Mac, a pretty nice standalone EPUB reader for Mac. And this is just an image of the page. So this is it looks pretty here, but it is just a ping file, so it doesn't scale particularly well. But you know, we were able to little check our feature off on our development schedule and sort of move on, and we were excited about that. But then, because I couldn't leave well enough alone, I said, well, I don't know yet what I don't know. I think down the line we're probably going to want more interesting transformations from this PDF than what we can do you know, right now in the midst of our development schedule. So like, let's just throw a whole PDF in there too in the EPUB file and let that come along as we build the product, because you know, maybe it'll be useful down the line. So we leveraged this sort of corner case, which is in the spec, but we are going to move away from from this method of adding multiple kinds of renditions into the file. But so for now, this works and it's valid, but I wouldn't say you want to build your architecture on it. So this is the container.xml file that you have probably never edited because it's almost always the same, and it normally points to the OPF file, and here there's a second. It's actually saying there's a second version of this book, and its root is this PDF file, and that's just the original file that we gave it. And I said, okay, well, we'll forget about this for now. And now we've got a PDF. We have a much bigger book than we did before, but we don't care because it's internal to our system. And then I started reading about some of the projects to do PDF to HTML5, and I said, okay, let's play with this. So this is a screenshot from our reading system in sort of its iPad mode. This is IBIS has moved along, and this is actually an HTML5 canvas, not an image. And you can tell that when you scale it up. So instead of being very blurry, you get very nice text. So we're able to do this without ever touching the EPUB, but only changing what we're sending in how it's being rendered at runtime, because we already had this stuff stuffed in the file. And so again, it was, even though we were both building the book and the reading system, we never needed to go back to the original book because this was always there for us. We're actually going to do the same trick with video. So we're going to take standalone videos and turn them into EPUB 3s with video. Again, because IBIS already knows what to do with those, so we don't need to teach it a new content type. It just sort of falls out. And so that was kind of cool, even though it pains me to work with PDF. So for us, that was a big win. You know, it's just sort of a particular case, but I think in the industry as a whole, if we think about a PDF as, or, I'm sorry, if we think about an ebook as this container full of everything we know, and the client as being something that gets a kind of unique, personalized book for every given context, there's a lot of things, sort of problems that disappear and some opportunities. You can get very, very granular with rights management. So control over portability. For example, if you have, say, a textbook that is essentially rented, it's available for a period of time, but it has features that you might want the student to take with them. So maybe at the end of a term, the book content expires, but the quizzes and some of maybe their own annotations stay alive. If you created a static file, well, they couldn't put anything in it at all in the first place, but you certainly couldn't turn a piece of that book off later. The file is what it is. The same thing could be true for things like image rights. I've talked to publishers who had great imagery for books that they had to withhold because their rights were going to expire in a year or two. And once that book goes into the supply chain, there's no sort of turning back. So the images just had to be withheld entirely. If you could turn them on and off in time, or maybe you have a book and movie tie-in, you can embed the trailer for the book, and then you know that right might expire after a period of time. timed revocation is obviously the sort of whole overdrive model is built on lending and time-based, but it's still file-based, so it's awkward and things have to phone home in a weird way. If it is a true streaming model, then can't sort of taking someone's access away is trivial. And we just don't need such a large ecosystem to manage that particular use case. Now, asset management, I think, is the more obvious and sort of big win. You get the ability to just future-proof almost everything about the book because you can put the largest, rawest assets you have in the book at the time you produce it and then just not worry about it anymore. You get the, I think the rumor now is that the next sort of series of Macs are going to have retina screens as well, so there's just no way to anticipate the kind of displays that you're going to deal with. And I think our books are going to look sort of progressively sillier as they're sort of locked into the specifications that came out at the time when those books were produced. We're still dealing with things like, I still see specs that have rules that came from like the first Sony readers, the restrictions about like the size of the text. And it's just totally ridiculous that you still have to, that publishers have to even think about that stuff. Single format media, we were totally unable to resolve the question in EPUB 3 about what video format we sanctioned, so we just sort of left it unspecified, and I actually think leaving it unspecified is the right way to go. It's not a publisher problem whether Apple and Google are going to fight over a standard. Just video is video, it gets transcoded, put in the best file you can and let other people deal with it. Whether they're going to send the whole thing down as a download or stream it and in what format, that's a computer problem, it's not a publishing problem. Multi-purpose titles, I was thinking, again, of cases where you, in a particular market, you might want a bilingual version of a book, but if you're just selling it in retail, you might just want that to be a single file, a single language. That's a contractual decision. That's a business decision. It shouldn't be something that gets encoded in a file. There are a whole range of sort of contractual things that end up being the like production assistance problem because they have to determine what goes in or out of the zip file. It's just a very, to me, sort of silly and fragile way to run a supply chain when this is something that really could be very easily managed in a more streaming context. And then sort of back to that kitchen sink approach, it's like, well, you have the book itself, but you can have all kinds of ancillary content that you might want to throw in there, specialty dictionaries for a particular type of book. You would not want to embed like a 5,000-page like medical dictionary in a book that's going to be downloaded, especially if that the same user probably would get that same dictionary like 50 times as they worked through their coursework. But if it's in the package as something that's potentially available and only pulled down as needed or even pulled down sort of per entry, again, like this is of incredible value add for the consumer without but a huge amount of transparency in how that's negotiated. I think the file model has led us into some of these sort of traps that really have ended up hurting mostly the book developers in the end. I mean, of course, we know that there's no sort of magic way to get everyone who produces a reading system, myself included, to follow the spec and do the thing that it says to do every time for every book. We're just not there, and we probably never will be. But I think what's sort of almost worse is that there's nothing wrong with adding more requirements if you're a retailer on top of the spec. The EPUB spec doesn't say anything about file size, but it's, of course, reasonable for you to have limits on file size if you are the supplier. But what that means is that whoever has the lowest file size kind of flattens the entire ecosystem, and then publishers have to make a choice about shipping multiple versions of the same content that's just subtly different because of someone's quirky business rule, or sending the sort of same kind of watered-down file to everyone. The last thing is sort of a minor point, but it's something that's coming up a lot in the web community, which is people were really excited about this concept called responsive design. We've inherited some of that in EPUB3 with Media Query. And it's the idea that you provide sort of multiple design layouts for different screen sizes, or now people like to talk about breakpoints. But the problem with that in the web is that there's no way to do that content negotiation that I showed earlier. You have to send the retina version of an image and the small version and the medium-sized version every single time. And so some of the sites that have used these interesting responsive design principles end up being actually sort of worse for the mobile sites that the mobile devices that they're meant to serve, because they just consume huge amounts of bytes just to get something that may not even be displayable. And this is enough of a problem that the W3 is sort of has a committee working on this to, at the syntax level in HTML5, provide some of this kind of content negotiation feature, so that you can say, don't download this image ever unless my screen size is bigger than 1024 pixels. So it's just sort of worth watching that work a little bit. You know, to expand on these ideas or sort of get them implemented, I mean, the first thing I'd like to see, and this is probably not especially controversial, is I would like to just broaden that. I'd like to take that single file language and soften it a little. That is admirable, but I just don't think it's practical for all of the things that we have said in EPUB 3 that we want these books to be. I would think of it as something more like an endpoint in an API, that you can have a representation of a book that lives somewhere on a network, but it doesn't have to ever exist as a file. Or maybe it only did at the time that it left the publisher. That sort of dialogue about I like EPUB 3 and SVG, I mean, those are just sort of things I've been thinking about. We might actually use that approach in our reader, so that's something that we'd certainly be willing to share if we kind of have a reference implementation for that. And then really, I want to see more business models that would take advantage of this kind of stuff. You know, some of it we already have in the library market, and certainly subscription products like Safari sort of leverage this, but it's not very formalized, and there certainly hasn't been a lot of experimentation with it. So I think there are some opportunities there to say, let's take really big books that have really interesting stuff in them and figure out how we can get those to consumers without compromising accessibility, speed, all of the things that are great about the file model, but taking some of that work away from the publishers. It's just not worth their time to learn everyone's business rules all through the supply chain. So I hope that gives you some stuff to think about, and probably have time for questions. Thanks. This one over there?
Yes, I have a question. I was wondering if Safari Books, if any of your products have, in part of what you're doing with these file formats, has room for user-contributed content, or if you're looking in that direction at all?
Safari has had some ability for users to upload their own personal documents. So I only joined the company this year, so most of what I'll talk about isn't something that we did. And then conversely, IBIS has always had the ability for users to upload their own books. That's basically what it was for. So I think we will probably do more of that in the future. And we certainly want to have a rich annotation system. We continue to watch some of the sort of open specifications on annotations and bookmarks, because we would always want that, at least if the user prefers, have that stuff be shareable and certainly be exportable. So there's functionality in the current product today to do that. Because Safari was really the only sort of subscription streaming book service outside of the library community, it's very much its own thing, and I'm sure we would like to make that part of a larger ecosystem. Thanks.
I've actually got a couple of questions. The first one is just a clarification. Is content negotiation, as you've defined it, fully accepted or fully defined in the EPUB 3 spec now?
Not at all. I made that up.
Okay, so you've made that up.
Wait, I borrowed from its implementation in HTTP, in the web.
Okay. And then the second question is, are there some cases where the content negotiation could have problems? And there's two that I can think of. One right away is, let's say if you've got a fixed format EPUB and it's written in English and you give an option for languages and the language on the reader is German. Obviously, German words tend to be a lot longer than English, and in a fixed format, that's going to blow things up. So that's one case. Another case is interactivity, where this is more of a user, sort of a user education problem than a functional problem, because you can have, let's say, a children's book where the kids, you've got interactive elements on the page that the kids can hit, and they're animated and they make sounds. But if the reader can't support them, the reader can simply say, hey, I can't support the animation. But when you market the book is going to be, the publisher is likely to market, this is an interactive book. The customer is going to be less concerned, is my particular reader interactive or not? And then they could buy it and end up being dissatisfied because they thought, oh, this is an interactive book, but it doesn't work. So
right.
Are there cases like that that you've thought through where you either can handle them or, that there are approaches that could be taken to make it work?
Sure. So for the first question about language, it's certainly a good one. I would say that I would certainly never imagine a scenario where you could toggle language in fixed layout where that layout was not specifically designed for that language. I mean, the text is normally part of that design, and the layout of that text is part of it. So, that would mean making different editions of that book exactly the way they would do in print. But it certainly would be a lot easier on the publisher if that type of multilingual content was reflowable, and then they at least don't have to do multiple designs. For the second part, I think in most cases we're in a scenario where the retail channels and the devices are pretty closely linked. So I would think of this as essentially a marketing issue. If in the iBooks store it has a certain set of capabilities, then the marketing material in the book entry in the iBooks store talks about that interactivity, but that same marketing material that went to Kindle and e-ink reader would just not mention it. But the file that left the publisher could be the same.
Thank you.
Okay, one on the left.
Hello. If you've got the content being drastically different or having multiple versions, how do you perceive that as being rendered in the ISBN world, where you've got an ISBN for each different type of language version, etc., that we currently have? Are you now saying that would all be under one ISBN number?
And that's a very good question. I mean, that's the sort of reason why I think we've stuck to this one rendition per file model. And for most publishers, that's going to be the right choice. But there are a lot of ways to enforce, say, royalty payments or geographic rights sort of outside of that file. So I think there probably are cases where publishers would like to produce content like that. Maybe the agreement they have is that, essentially they get sort of paid twice. It's that level of the sort of business of publishing, I think, belongs in contracts and in the capabilities of the systems that serve those ecosystems and not in the file. But there's really nothing about this that prevents you from making one file per language. There's just a number of cases I can think of where it would be advantageous to have that flexibility and still do all the enforcement that you need contractually in business, sort of where I think it belongs. I mean, there's not any particular reason why we even need to have an association between an ISBN and a file anyway. There could be different ISBNs in the book catalog, but you happen to be getting the same file, whichever one you select, whichever language you picked. Again, it should the container of the book should not really be a part of that conversation. It doesn't have to be.
Thank you. So I guess, you know, relative to PDFs, right, which is, you know, the forbidden word, the one thing that it does do well in respect to higher ed textbook publishing, right, is the proverbial, you know, okay class, turn to chapter 5, you know, page 56, paragraph 3. Okay, everybody's on the same page, right? You know, the more readers that come out, the different sizes of screens, resolution sizes, as the browser adjusts and text flows, how does EPUB deal with scope, right? Scope of content. The guy sitting next to me or gal is reading. We're all reading or wanting to read the same content at the same time in the right place, but everybody's in a different environment based on the technology they use. So what is the, you know...
I mean, this is... There are certainly some technology accommodations for that. It's possible to put... if you're dealing with... Some students might have a physical book and some might have an electronic book. You can put mappings between the page numbers into the reader. But I think ultimately this is just not... We're just going to talk about positioning in books differently. You know, talk about sections. Page numbers are very convenient for that use case. But technology is not going to solve the good problem of having the ability for different people to experience the content in different ways.
And do you feel like that's a responsibility that falls on the reader, the creator of the reader, whether it be in the browser or the hardware, that, you know, they're able to kind of align everybody regardless of where or what they're using to read the book?
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that the sort of classroom products, things like VitalSource, and have that ability sort of baked in. But you have to be within a closed ecosystem to do that exceptionally well. You could imagine a scenario that was more open where it could work, but that positioning problem is something I know that I've talked about with other people in the industry, and it's actually a very difficult technical problem.
Right.
So that kind of like across all platforms, having that ability to sync up, I think is... You know, I don't know that we'll get there. I think it's more a cultural shift that will stop mattering so much if someone, you know, uses search to find a position or uses a section number rather than a page number.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, and we're all set. Thanks very much.